Welcome to Base by Base, the papercast that brings genomics to you wherever you are. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to follow and rate us in your podcast app. So I want you to picture a healthy human heart. It works like this perfectly synchronized orchestra.
Yeah, exactly. It's a really tight rhythm section.
Right. But then for, I think the number is nearly 59.7 million people worldwide.
Yeah.
That electrical rhythm just, well, it breaks down into total chaos.
It does, yeah. And that's the condition we call atrial fibrillation.
Exactly. So instead of a conductor keeping time, it's like every single musician suddenly starts playing at their own tempo.
Which, musically speaking, sounds awful.
Right. And medically speaking, it's even worse. It leads to palpitations, a massive drop in exercise capacity, and some really serious cardiovascular complications.
Yeah, strokes, heart failure. It's incredibly dangerous.
But, and this is the crazy part, imagine a world where we could predict this chaotic rhythm years before it actually happens.
Just by reading a person's genetic blueprint.
Yeah. And looking at the proteins floating around in their blood. So the question we're asking for today's deep dive is, how could expanding our genetic mapping beyond just one ancestry fundamentally rewrite our understanding of how and why the heart loses its beat?
Well, today we celebrate the work of Shua Yuan, Ji Chen, Susanna C. Larson, Scott M. Damrower, and a massive collaborative research team from institutions like the University of Pennsylvania and Karolinska Institute, who have advanced our understanding of the genetic etiology of atrial fibrillation.
It's just a huge, monumental effort.
Massive. We're basing this deep dive on their article, Cross-Population GWAs and Proteomics Improve Risk Prediction and Reveal Mechanisms in Atrial Fibrillation, which is published in the journal Nature Communications on July 11th, 2025.
Such an incredible paper.
It really is. But to truly appreciate this breakthrough, we first need to look at why previous genetic maps of the heart were, you know, incomplete.
Right, the historical gap.
Exactly. So we have to look at the scale of this epidemic. The global population is aging, right?
Yeah, definitely. People are living much longer.
And because of that, atrial fibrillation, or AF, is just surging, especially in places like North America and Europe.
Right. And obviously, lifestyle and environment play a huge part of that.
They do, yeah. Diet, stress, all of that. But the underlying genetic susceptibility to AF is substantial. Like the physical architecture of the heart, how it handles electrical impulses, how it responds to stress, much of that is coded right there in our DNA.
Which is why researchers have been doing these genome-wide association studies, or GWS, for years, right? Trying to map out those exact genetic coordinates.
Exactly. And prior GWS actually did uncover over 100 risk loci for AF.
Okay, wait, let's unpack this for a second, because almost all of those previous studies only looked at European population.
Yeah, that's the big blind spot.
I mean, isn't that like trying to solve a giant jigsaw puzzle when you've only been given pieces from like the top left corner?
That's a spot on analogy. The lack of ancestral diversity is a massive hurdle in genomic.
Because you're just missing so much human data.
Exactly. When you only look at one population, you miss variants that might have smaller effect sizes. You just lack the global statistical power.
Right.
You also miss population-specific genetic loci. But perhaps most critically, you struggle to isolate the shared genetic loci.
You mean the universal biological mechanisms?
Yeah, the ones that drive the disease across all humans, regardless of their ancestry, because if you can find those universal mechanisms, you can develop universal therapies.
So to build a more comprehensive map and fix that puzzle, this team went huge.
Oh, unprecedented scale.
Right.
They did a cross-population GWS meta-analysis pulling data from over 2 million individuals.
2 million. That is just staggering.
It is. It included 168,007 patients with AF and nearly 2 million controls without it.
And they finally spanned different ancestries, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
European, East Asian, African, and admixed American ancestries.
Which is fantastic.
Yeah.
But the scale of the data is just the start, right? Yeah. Finding a genetic signal, like a specific coordinate on the DNA that correlates with AF, is only step one.
Right, finding the locus.
Wait, let's explore that for a second for you listening. Yeah. Because if they already have 2 million people's genomes, and they spot a region of DNA highly linked to AF, why do they need complex computer programs to figure out the gene? The data is right there. Can't they just look at the gene sitting at that spot?
You'd think so, but the human genome is incredibly complex. A genetic variant associated with a disease might sit in this vast genetic desert far away from any known gene.
Whoa, wow.
Or it might sit right between two completely different genes. It might not even affect the gene closest to it. It could be a regulatory switch that folds over in three-dimensional space to control a gene millions of base pairs away.
Ah, okay. So finding the locus is like identifying a suspicious neighborhood, but it doesn't tell you which house the problem is coming from or who actually lives there.
Exactly. So the researchers deployed this really comprehensive gene prioritization framework.
Meaning they used multiple tools to narrow it down.
Yeah, six different computational methods. Rather than just guessing based on proximity, they used tools like MayGMA and EQTL colocalization.
What does EQTL colocalization actually do?
Well, it essentially looks at actual human heart tissue to see if the genetic variant in question directly alters how much of a specific protein is being produced.
Oh, so they are tracing the wire from the genetic switch directly to the light bulb inside the heart tissue.
Spot on, and that rigor is what gives us the headline results here. They identified 525 genetic loci reaching genome-wide significance. And of those, 379 were completely novel. They had never been reported before.
That fundamentally expands what we know about the biology of the heart. But when they looked across the different ancestries, did any specific genes stand out as universal?
They did. They found two specific genes, PITX2 and ZFHX3, that were shared risk loci across all four ancestries.
What do those genes actually do in a healthy heart?
So PITX2 is deeply involved in structural development and how the heart handles calcium ions.
And calcium is the messenger for contraction, right?
Exactly. So if PITX2 is dysregulated, calcium handling gets erratic. It leads to rogue electrical sparks that trigger the chaotic rhythm. And ZFHX3 is similarly vital. Losing its function leads directly to atrial dysfunction and physical remodeling of the heart tissue.
The electrical grid gets structurally compromised. Now, I do want to mention the breakdown of those 525 loci across the populations, because it highlights an ongoing issue.
Right. The numbers reflect the available sample sizes.
Yeah. So it was 483 loci in Europeans, 29 in East Asians, 5 in Africans, and 2 in admixed Americans.
Which just shows how much discovery potential is still out there for non-European populations.
Absolutely. Oh. Okay, so having this genetic map is incredible, but genetics is only half the battle. If we want to prevent AF, we need to know what real-world habits are waking up these dormant genetic risks.
Right, the lifestyle factors. And to figure that out, the team used Mendelian randomization.
Yes. Let me actively jump in and clarify Mendelian randomization, or MR for you listening, because it's brilliant. So instead of relying on observational studies, which can be super misleading, Mendelian randomization acts like nature's own randomized controlled trial.
It's such a powerful tool.
It really is.
Yes.
Because your genes are locked in at birth, researchers can see if a genetic predisposition to a trait, like high cholesterol, actually causes the disease, rather than just hanging around the scene of the crime.
Right. It completely bypasses the environmental confounders that plague normal observational studies.
So when they ran those modifiable risk factors through this MR analysis, what actually caused the fibrillation?
They confirmed definitive causal links for traits like childhood and adult BMI, waist-to-hip ratio, smoking, alcohol consumption, and type 2 diabetes.
Which, you know, physical damage from obesity or smoking makes intuitive sense.
It drives inflammation, yeah.
But they also found insomnia was a causal driver. Wait, insomnia? Really? How does a lack of sleep fundamentally rewire the electrical grid of the atria?
It comes down to the autonomic nervous system. When you suffer from chronic insomnia, your body is subjected to sustained physiological stress.
Like being stuck in fight-or-flight mode.
Exactly. Your sympathetic nervous system becomes overactive. This floods the heart with adrenaline over long periods.
So the heart is constantly being told to race.
Yes, and that chronic overstimulation leads to increased oxidative stress and inflammation, which eventually causes microscarring or fibrosis in the delicate atrial tissue.
And then the electrical signals hit that scar tissue fragment and start circling back on themselves.
And that is what creates the fibrillation.
That is fascinating how a behavioral state like wakefulness translates into literal physical scar tissue.
It's incredible biology.
It is. But this brings us to the twist in the proteomics data. We mentioned at the very beginning of this deep dive that there was a finding regarding a circulating protein that completely upends a long-standing clinical assumption.
Oh, yes. The NT-proBNP finding.
Tell me about this, because this protein is a huge deal in cardiology.
It is. In traditional observational settings, NT-proBNP is a gold standard biomarker. When a patient comes into the hospital suffering from severe atrial fibrillation, their blood levels of this protein are exceptionally high.
Right. And if you always see high levels of a protein during a cardiac crisis, the logical assumption is that the protein is contributing to the pathology.
You'd assume it's part of the disease process, yeah. But when the researchers applied Mendelian randomization to determine the actual causal direction,
they found the exact opposite.
Completely backwards.
They discovered that a genetic liability to AF is actually associated with reduced levels of NT-proBNP.
Yes.
That feels completely contradictory. If it's a marker of heart failure, shouldn't genetic risk for the disease elevate it?
It totally seems like a paradox, but it actually reveals the beautiful compensatory mechanics of the human body. Because MR shows us the true causal direction, this inverse relationship proves that the high NT-proBNP levels we see in patients aren't the cause of the fibrillation.
They are the consequence.
Exactly. When the heart's rhythm breaks down, the atrial muscle stretches and experiences immense hemodynamic stress. In response to that trauma, the heart pumps out NT-proBNP to try and reduce blood pressure and decrease the workload.
So it's a protective secondary stress response. It's the fire alarm, not the arsonist.
That's a perfect way to put it. Having genetically lower baseline levels of this protective protein might actually be part of what leaves your heart vulnerable to the chaos in the first place.
It perfectly illustrates the danger of relying solely on observational data. We see the firefighters at the burning building and assume they started the fire just because they're always there.
But the genetics prove they're just responding to the emergency.
And this distinction fundamentally transforms how we think about risk prediction. Because the researchers didn't stop at discovery. They wanted to build something doctors could actually use.
Right. They integrated their genomic data with proteomic profiling, analyzing 87 circulating proteins to build incredibly powerful risk models.
It's like a supercharged crystal ball. Let's highlight the performance of combining the polygenic risk score, or PGS, with a protein score, the PRO-S. Can you break down the stats for the listener?
Sure. So the combined model achieved an AUC of 0.823.
Okay, for anyone who doesn't live and breathe statistics, hitting an AUC of 0.823 for a highly complex, multifactorial disease like AF is just a massive leap forward.
It really is. Usually, polygenic risk scores for complex traits hover in the 0.6 to 0.7 range.
Right.
So 0.823 means the model is highly capable of identifying those at extreme risk. Individuals in the top 10th percentile of this model had a more than six-fold increased risk of developing AF compared to the bottom percentile.
That's incredible. It allows doctors to predict a patient's risk of AF with high accuracy, decades before it happens.
Exactly.
So how does this actually shape clinical practice?
Well, targeted AF prevention can now focus with certainty on weight management, lowering blood pressure, and behavioral intervention.
Like reducing screen time for insomnia or cutting alcohol.
Yes. Furthermore, identifying pathways like TGF-beta signaling opens the door for novel drug developments.
TGF-beta is heavily involved in cardiac fibrosis, right?
It is. It drives the scarring. So if pharmaceutical companies can target that specific pathway, we might be able to halt the structural damage before the electrical circuits ever misfire.
We could treat the architecture of the heart before the rhythm breaks down, though we do have to note the study's limitations. Despite the cross-population effort, the statistical power in non-European ancestries was still limited.
Right, due to those smaller sample sizes we mentioned earlier.
It proves we desperately need more equitable genetic databases.
We absolutely do. And measuring proteins in the blood, while minimally invasive and super convenient, might not perfectly capture what is happening directly in the localized heart tissue.
Because the blood is picking up signals from the whole body.
But
even with those limitations, the central insight here is just profound. By uniting multi-ancestry genomic data with circulating protein analysis, this research expands the genetic map of atrial fibrillation with hundreds of new risk loci.
And it cleanly separates causal drivers from biological bystanders.
Yes. This multi-insymmetric approach fundamentally enhances our ability to predict, prevent, and eventually treat the world's most common cardiac arrhythmia. Which leaves you, the listener, with a final question to ponder.
Go for it.
What does this mean for the future of cardiovascular care? When a simple blood draw and a DNA swab could map out your heart's rhythm decades before it ever misses a beat.
It's a whole new frontier for medicine.
This episode was based on an open access article under the CC BY 4.0 license. You can find a direct link to the paper and the license in our episode description. If you enjoyed this, follow or subscribe in your podcast app and leave a 5-star rating. If you'd like to support our work, use the donation link in the description. Now stay with us for an original track created especially for this episode and inspired by the article you've just heard about. Thanks for listening, and join us next time as we explore more science, bass by bass.
Across the distances, the story holds. Shared little switches in the code we're told. From muscle and motion to hidden drive, we map the reasons the misfires thrive. From blood to flame, we lie.